this is not experimental jab. This is biological and chemical warfare. The communist Chinese on the doorstep of Australia and New Zealand, they want Taiwan. They took Hong Kong a year ago and nobody said a word. They were crying out to Trump a year and a half ago, excuse me, crying out to Trump, Trump save us, and Trump didn't help. And so you're saying, and we have a Justice for J6 coming up here in D.C. And they're already putting the fences up around the Capitol again. And they're going to bring the National Guard back in again, right, to protect, to bring their bodyguards, their military. And Liz was mentioning earlier about, well, we're going to have military tribunals like Nuremberg. I hope so. Mm. The military swears an oath, and I believe every nation's military does this, the Western free nations. They have an oath that the military member swears to support and defend the Constitution or the Crown, the law, basically, support and defend the Constitution, the Queen, from enemies, foreign and domestic. Okay, so internal enemies as well. The problem with America and many nations is we don't recognize the internal enemies that are here amongst us. I've said a few years ago that the Democrats who have been pushing and promoting the killing of unborn children for 40, 50 years now, pushing it, promoting it while people have been standing around like that's normal. That is not normal to kill our progeny. It's not normal to kill our children in the mother's wombs.
Would you call yourself a socialist?
No.
You've never told a lie in politics?
No.
See, somebody sent me a video actually last Friday, and it had you talking at the socialist meeting.
Oh, right. Yes.
And you mentioned the word comrade about four times in a minute. What was that about?
It was a rally, and I would have been about 25 years old.
Comrade.
That was in 2009.
Oh, well, I can't remember which country it was in.
Has it changed since those days?
No, not particularly. No.
If you are caught in a lie or caught intentionally misleading the New Zealand public, how would you expect to be held to account?
Well, I actually believe that it is possible to exist in politics without lying.
We drum in that messaging around the dangers of COVID pretty diligently for a full 2-week period of sustained propaganda.
This morning at about, it would have been 5 o'clock, I think. Let's have a look and see what time it was. I wrote a little piece in One News. They were talking about this fellow at Tino Pai. I don't know, is that his name? No, Dan Corbett. He must read the weather. I don't know, because I don't look at television anymore. I don't look at TV. And it would have been 13 hours ago, so quite some time ago. And I said, they were talking about the meteorologist Dan Corbett and his wonderful effort that he's putting in to speak Maori. Te reo, they call it. It was always Maori when I was a kid. Anyway, and I said, well, when I was a boy, when I was in Radio New Zealand, I learned to speak, to pronounce perfectly and read a page of Maori words. None of us had a clue what we were calling, what we were reading, rather, including Keith McIntyre and David England. They were the speech executives for Television New Zealand and Radio New Zealand at the time, back in the 90s. And but they had to examine us, our recordings. And I received the highest mark, actually, one of the highest marks for my recording. And there was a note from Keith McIntyre to say that was the best he'd heard from some time. I think I remember him saying, I've just come back from break, and that was one of the best pronunciation, best readings of Maori language that I've heard in some time. Very good, well done. But all we were doing was parroting a few Maori words to an English-speaking audience. And I don't think that unites the country. It serves to irritate and divide the majority of us. And Donna Kirk, well, she came back at me. The reason why I'm sharing this now is because I got banned, and I think it was because of this. That's all I said. And then Donna, she said, so? Just because you didn't take it further and develop a better comprehension of Titoe, she said here, Titoe, it doesn't mean others don't. Perhaps, now who's that? Peter Sharman, all right, have no idea, or something, or it's bigger, all right, hang on, I can't talk to you now. Then she says, so it doesn't mean that others don't, okay, Well, okay. Perhaps others see it as a way of sharing the uniqueness in New Zealand. And I said, well, none of us, presenters, including some Māori presenters, had a clue what they were reading. It was all show to keep the boss happy. And it was just pandering to the government. And they were just following the United Nations directives to divide and rule a nation. That's what they do. That's exactly what they do. And then this fellow Craig, and I'm hoping Craig will join me tonight. I'm hoping he will. But Craig came on and says, Donna Kirk, he's right, mate. Māori language is getting absolutely rammed down our throats here. I don't mind them speaking or learning it, and good on them for doing so. Māori is a language that is probably spoken by less than 10% of our population and probably 0.00001% of a percent worldwide. It's a big no for me, he said. If they want to learn another language, he said, if I want to learn another language, he said it would be French, Japanese or Spanish. We would have two dedicated Māori channels, and he's absolutely right. This has all come out because Taxinda is forcing the issue back by the United Nations, and that's why she gave $55 million bribe to New Zealand Broadcasting. And he said, if you do your research, she started this in her first term and did so with her coalition partner's knowledge. She is absolutely a wolf in sheep's clothing, and New Zealanders will be paying for her so-called leadership, way past our lifetimes. She's destroying our country. This is Jacinda Ardern, is destroying our country, our country's future, and too many people are blinded by her outward niceness, which is just a political front, and giving her free rein to do as she and the United Nations please. She will be off to the UN just like Helen Clark, just like she did, and leave this country in her wake, and hopefully it's not too late for us to get rid of her and to get someone in who's going to do a proper job. But who would we get in? Who would we get in? We've got the Marxist communists now running New Zealand, and we've got the National Party, which is just basically controlled by the Chinese. The Chinese have sort of infiltrated the National Party. So we've got that Belt and Road on one hand, and that's communism, isn't it? The Chinese Communist Party on one side. So National's all gone down that track. And I don't know about Seymour. Maybe he's the same. Maybe he is. I don't think he's really for freedom of speech. He talks about it. But I think he's happy to allow business owners to discriminate against New Zealanders with this vaccine passport nonsense. He says that business owners have the right to choose who comes into their business. Well, no, they don't. If business owners are going to be operating under the New Zealand laws, they've got to obey New Zealand laws. They've got to obey the Bill of Rights, and they've got to obey human rights. You can't discriminate against someone because of their health choices. And I'm not an anti-vaxxer. People like to call me an anti-vaxxer, but I'm not an anti-vaxxer, not at all. I am pro-choice. And I think if you want to get vaccinated, good on you. Go and get vaccinated. Go and get vaccinated. But if you don't want to get vaccinated, well, don't get vaccinated. Just say no. And your employer's got no business. As far as health and safety goes, health and safety is his responsibility to make sure his premises, his or her premises, are up to scratch. They're safe for you. You don't have to give him any information about your personal choices. If you don't want to get vaccinated, the answer's no. And we've got to make a stand on this. We've got to say no to these people that want to force their will upon us.
My name is Julie Panessi, and this message is about mandatory vaccinations. I am a professor of ethics at Huron College at the University of Western Ontario. It's one of the largest universities in Canada. Today, I'm going to teach you a short lesson on the universally accepted ethics of coercing people into medical procedures. I'll be the example. My employer has just mandated that I must get a vaccine for COVID-19. If I want to keep working at my job as a professor, I have to take this vaccine. Here's my conundrum. My school employs me to be an authority on the subject of ethics. I hold a PhD in ethics and ancient philosophy. And I'm here to tell you it's ethically wrong to coerce someone to take a vaccine. If it happens to you, you don't have to do it. If you don't want a COVID vaccine, don't take one. End of discussion. It's your own business. But that is not the approach of the University of Western Ontario, which has suddenly required that I be vaccinated immediately or not report for work. So with the school year beginning in a few days, I am facing imminent dismissal after 20 years on the job because I will not submit to having an experimental vaccine injected into my body. I've had plenty of vaccines in my life, but I've never been forced to take one. It's always been my choice. I don't work in a high-risk environment. I'm not a doctor in an emergency room. I'm a teacher. I'm a university professor. My job is to teach students how to think critically, to ask questions that might expose a false argument. Questions like, says who? Who is the authority giving this order? Should I trust them with control over my body? As a professor, I don't have to watch the news to find out if the COVID vaccines are safe. I read medical journals and I consult my colleagues who are professors of science and medicine. I've learned from doctors that there are serious questions about how safe these vaccines really are. There are questions about how well they work. Nobody's promising that I won't get COVID or transmit COVID if I get the vaccine. But ultimately, none of that matters to me because I'm a professor of ethics and I'm a Canadian. I'm entitled to make choices about what does and does not enter my body, regardless of my reasons. If I'm allowed back into my university, it's my job to teach my students that this is wrong. I'm hired to teach them that it is ethically wrong to impose an experimental medical procedure as a condition of employment. This is my first and potentially my last lesson of the year. Ethics 101. In the spirit of Socrates, who was executed for asking questions, this lesson will consist of only one question. The answer is multiple choice. Please listen carefully. When a person has done the same job to the satisfaction of her employer for 20 years, is it right or is it wrong to suddenly demand that they submit to an unnecessary medical procedure in order to keep their job? In this case, the procedure is an injection of a substance that has not been fully tested for safety. It has not yet been shown to be effective. It is designed to prevent an illness that poses little threat to the employee. The employee is not allowed to ask questions. She may only submit to the procedure or be fired. To my first year students, is this right or is this wrong? I already know the answer.
There's plenty of evidence to say that unvaccinated people are not the spreaders of this virus, if there is such a thing as a virus. And maybe that's a big hoax as well. Vaccinated people, and now the cutting edge is that's coming through from Tel Aviv University. They've just released a report, and I'll read it to you. But jaw dropping, I always find it hard to say jaw and dropping at the same time quickly. Jaw dropping. Academic study shows natural immunity is superior to COVID vaccine. So this was posted on the 26th of August, not that long ago. Have never heard a word of it in the mainstream media. In fact, when I rang mainstream media and talked back and tried to tell them about it, I was cut off. I was cut off and ridiculed. And this fellow, Tim, he actually had a script prepared with all this nonsense stuff from the CDC. And we already know that the CDC is putting out some rubbish. And also from whoever else he is at the communist headquarters there in Wellington, the Communist Party. So the global debate of COVID mRNA vaccine mandates and passports has ignited social media, policymakers, and policies that impact nearly every aspect of public life. A number of major studies by universities are confirming basic biology principles. So this is not new. This is basic biology principles about the power of natural immunity. Researchers at Maccabi Healthcare and Tel Aviv University compared the outcomes of over 76,000 Israelis.
Are you going to get vaccinated?
Three groups.
I think I want to wait a bit longer.
Mind you,
what do you need to wait?
Not been peer reviewed yet.
I'm just not in a rush
so
to get it, mate.
Edge.
Have you had it?
But before you can actually start and do some research like this,
how am I being
you
selfish?
Have to show.
Because if you get COVID, you can
show
pass it on
and
to
convince
me.
The heads of the university.
Yeah, but I can still get it.
It's worth them
so
putting their team onto this because there was about 10 like high level researchers.
You should still get it because then you won't pass it on to me.
It's
but if I get vaccinated, I can still get
stage,
it and still pass it on to you.
And hasn't
well, yeah,
been
but you should still get it.
And you know,
you can catch it off me whether I've been vaccinated.
You know, and
or
I
not.
Don't think that.
Yeah, but you should still
you know,
get
you've got
vaccinated.
People, they say it's peer review. You should just get a whole bunch
right
of scientists
to do.
That are all, you know, paid by
the people that
by
make it,
the drug companies, to say a certain thing. They'll prostitute themselves. Don't worry about that. They'll prostitute themselves. So there was no external funding, and I like that. So we haven't got Gates in there giving $1 billion to the CDC to carry out some research. So anyway, 76,000 people, they were into three groups. The first group was double vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine. Now, I like the sound of that because it's important to us here in New Zealand because we're being jabbed with this Pfizer vaccine. So this was a double. They were double vaccinated. That's the first group of 76,000 Israelis in this research paper, in this study that they did. The second group had previously had a COVID infection, we hope, the PCP, what do they call it, PCP, the PCR test, which was designed by David, Dr. Kerry Mullis, I think from memory, and funnily, he died just like 2 or 3 months, I think it might have been 3 or 4 months just before the first case of COVID came out. That's very interesting. I find that rather suspicious. I'd like to look into that. So if anyone has any information on Kerry Mullis, and they say he died of pneumonia, which is what you would die if you had COVID and you weren't treated properly, perhaps if they gave you remdesivir, you might die of pneumonia. Very interesting. And then anyway, that's the middle group. Previously had COVID, infected, but they were unvaccinated. So the first group were doubly vaccinated with Pfizer. The second group were they had COVID and they were unvaccinated. The third group caught COVID. They had the infection. They only had a single dose. And they looked at those people. And I've got a link to the study. In fact, if you go to our website here, you can see the link to the study. It's a bona fide link. There's two studies here. And there was also, I want to tell you, there was also a peer-reviewed paper which agrees with this study at La Jolla University in Los Angeles. I think they're in San Diego, La Jolla University in California, San Diego. So the researchers discovered that immunity acquired through infection from COVID-19 is superior to immunity from the Pfizer biotech vaccine. That's what they found. The study also found that fully vaccinated but uninfected people were significantly more likely to have what they call a breakthrough infection. And, you know, they call it that, but I think they would know better than me. Who am I? I don't know anything. But I think that the vaccines are causing these breakthroughs. Well, they admit that it is doing that, but I think it's the actual I don't think it's a breakthrough at all. I think it's the vaccines that are actually causing this Delta variant. But they've called it, they've been very nice, and they've said it's a breakthrough COVID infection. That's what the vaccines have been causing, more likely than people who had been previously infected and recovered from the disease. So the authors concluded that the study demonstrated that natural immunity confers longer lasting and stronger protection against infection, symptomatic disease, and hospitalization. And that was caused by the Delta variant. Now, there was an earlier study, and old Tim had cut me off by now because I was long gone because he realized, you know, that this isn't what Jacinda's told us we have to be talking about. So we've got to stop this person, just like he did to another friend of mine that week before, and just like he's doing to everybody. And that's why the people that are listening to their radio and television are just being told lies. They're not hearing the truth. So back on in July 2021, just a couple of months ago, there was a study called the Longitudinal Analysis. It shows durable and broad immune memory after SARS-CoV-2 infection with persisting antibody responses and memory B and T cells. Now, I don't know what that means. Never clue. But the study essentially highlighted that most recovered COVID-19 patients mount broad, durable immunity after the infection. And the study is on our Podbean website. You can see it there. The link is sell.com and a whole lot of other stuff, which I'm not going to read out. You can get the link, copy and paste it, and have a look for yourself. Well, so that was very interesting. Now, what was I talking about? Oh, the Maori language thing. Yeah. So if you want to talk about that with me, that's good. And the other thing is, Bill Shrug piped in and said, well, it just makes the weather twice as long to have it all read in Maori. And he wasn't very good at it. I mean, they said, oh, what a wonderful job he's done. You know, he's pronounced all the words, but it didn't flow. Not as good as mine when back in the 1980s, Grant, I have a really bad signal here, but I will try. Okay. Good on you, mate. That's good. So we're talking about Maori language on the news. It is being rammed down our throat, let's face it. And is that what we want? Why do we have to do that? They've got two channels. Why do they need to bombard us with their Maori language? I'm not a racist. You say, oh, no, plenty of Maoris. No, I'm not at all. In fact, I find Maoris are a bit more racist towards me than I am to them. I want us to be one. I want us to be one people, and I don't want to have separate hospitals and separate this and separate that. I don't think there should be a Maori party. I don't believe there should be a Maori seats in the electoral rolls, Maori electoral roll. I don't think that shouldn't happen. That's, to me, that is special favoritism to people that may well have been here first, but there were others here first as well. And, you know, I was here in 1960, and a lot of these people that are saying that I was here first, you know, they're just little kids. This is what they're being taught in the past. Is that what it is? You just teach them to be racist, like the Palestinians teach their children to hate the Jews. That's what they do in the school books, in the textbooks, in Gaza, at Gaza Elementary School. They have it in there that the Jews are to be pushed into the sea. So this starts young. This racism, which I find disgraceful, it starts very young, and it's happening with us. But, you know, I don't really think it's the Maoris on their own. They were fine up until about 1975. We didn't have any trouble. Then all of a sudden, we had the communists, the Marxists got in there. And there was a guy that wrote a book, and I can't remember his name, McGregor or what was his name, Steve somebody. He wrote a book back in the 80s, and it was called Shadows Over New Zealand, I think it was called, Shadows Over New Zealand, where he showed us the communist Marxist infiltration into our country through the schools. It was through the local body elections. I don't know if we had school boards back in the 70s and 80s. I think that came a little bit later. We may have done, but I can't remember. Yeah, we probably did. And also they were getting into parliament. And so here they are now, this band of Marxists are in our government, and they are running our country, and we don't realize it, that they aren't nice people. These people believe in the collective. The collective is more important than the individual. They say that you'll have no house and you'll be happy. You won't own anything and you'll be happy. Well, I won't be happy. I won't be happy owning nothing. I like to own things. And when I work hard, I like to have something to show for it. So I won't be happy owning nothing. And I won't be happy just living in the city and being pushed off the land and living in the city and living within 15 minutes of my home address and where everything that I need I can get by just walking. I don't want to walk all the time. I like walking. I like tramping. I like running. But I don't want to walk all the time. I want to drive my car. I had a V8 there for a little while. I used to love that big 6.2 liter, I think it was. Beautiful, lovely sound. Can't beat that. I want to be able to drive one of those if I want to. I want to do what I like. Why not? And why not? If you can afford it, you should be able to. And, you know, greenies, they talk about greenies. Honestly, I can remember. What's the latest now? Actually, I'll just tell you before I go back to a memory. The latest is with recycling. They think now in some of the councils in New Zealand, they think it's better that instead of putting it into a landfill, they're just going to burn it. They're just going to burn it. Oh, my goodness. So all that plastic and all that, they're just going to burn the stuff. So you can't tell me that that's better to burn it than to bury it. I would have thought if you just buried it somewhere where you're not likely to use it, it might break down in a few thousand years maybe. Who knows? But Anyway, so where are we? We're back. I've sort of waffled off a bit. I've gone on there about Donna Kirk. Yeah, there she goes. And I went back to her. I said, well, none of us knew what we were talking about when we were doing that Maori stuff. And I'll tell you what, that fellow, Dan Corbett, I bet you he hasn't got a clue what he's saying. He's just parroting words and reading a script. He probably hasn't got a clue. Hasn't got a clue. And he probably puts the words into Google or something, into Google Translate, and that comes up maybe. I don't know. Who knows? Or they've got someone there giving them a few Maori words. But it's all just greetings and stuff, isn't it? Half the Maoris that get up and do this thing like Billy Tickahecker, I wonder if he knows everything he's talking about. How would we know? How would we know what he's telling people at his meetings? Who knows? So anyway, I quite like what Craig said. I'm hoping that Craig will join me a bit later on. But it doesn't look like he's going to, because you know what? People are struggling to get on here. You seem to be struggling, and I don't know why that is. Share your live stream. How do I do that? Let's have a look. Yeah. Oh, okay. I'll click on that. So I don't know if this is going to work. No, because if they get there, they'll know what it is anyway. Yeah. Oh, never mind. Anyway, so that's me. Now, our live stream is supposed to start in about 10 minutes, so I'm just waffling on here anyway, talking about things, just trying to get a handle on it. Dennis has got 10 minutes before his wife gets home, then he's not allowed to talk anymore. So I guess I could play some music while we're waiting. How about that? What about this?
In 1999, we built a bioweapon. I wrote my first classified briefing on it in 2001. I actually gave the lectures on bioweapons and global security in 2003 in Bled, Slovenia. In 2004, in the Islamic Republic of Iran at the National Bioweapons Conference in Iran. This is a history record that is not new to this conversation. This was known, and we, in 2005, decided to make it a DARPA-funded initiative.
Has the Supreme Court overturned ruled that the vaccines are illegal? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that's completely rubbish. I heard all sorts of things. I heard that the military at the time of the inauguration, when the imposter Joe Biden went in to be sworn in to the White House, we heard that the military were going to arrest him. And of course that never happened, did it? So all that Q stuff, you know. And even I heard General Flynn, who I thought was a Q guy, but he's not. He said, there's no plan. He said, it's up to you. You've got to join the school boards. You've got to, you know, get into your local council, your local body elections, and get elected and turn things around. And so it's all about voting the right people in. That's what he says. So there is not going to be any coup in America. There is not, you know, Trump is not going to be put back in without having to go through the proper campaign and voting all over again. But one thing they do have to do in America, and that is to sort out the electoral fraud, which is absolutely obvious that there is, and that needs to be sorted out. There's no doubt about that. And I was hoping Sarah Smith would join me, but she says, my apologies. We can do it next Saturday. Oh, that'll be great. Yeah, that'll be great, Sarah. That'll be fabulous. So I'll look forward to having you on next Saturday.
And we also need to make sure that when public health officials come back again saying, oh, this is 2022 and we have another disease, we need politicians who are going to say no way.
So welcome, everybody. It's Grant Edwards. You are listening to Liberty NZ Live in New Zealand. The time is 8:15 at night. And for John McClone, we've got John McClone in Kentucky. Although I think did you say you're at Louisville?
Yes, sir. Louisville, Kentucky. That's
Louisville.
Right.
And it's about 4:15, I would imagine, in the morning.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Right. Only you Americans call me, sir. No one else calls me sir. Not even my kids call me sir. And we've got Liz Lambert from Auckland, New Zealand. And so we're going to have this open talk back. You can let us know if you want to talk to us. Feel free. I was just doing a bit of a rant earlier on, just testing out the gear. I didn't actually get a chance to hear it, so I'm hoping that it's okay. I find that if you play around with the volume, you can turn it up too high, and I completely ruined most of last Saturday's talk with you, John, and there was some great talk. Wow. So hopefully that won't happen again tonight. So, well, Liz was here first. John, do you have to go anywhere in a hurry? Like, do you want to chat first? Seeing as you're it's 4 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I actually have. I was awakened early this morning. I'm not sure why, but no, I have about an hour.
Right.
If I can just, I'll take a break and go rinse my mouth.
Oh.
I called because I thought you had emailed me that.
This is raw radio.
That's right.
Raw radio, raw, mate. So you've just woken up.
Yeah.
You had your mouth open all
just
night.
Just woken up.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, you go and rinse your mouth. Go and brush your teeth. 4 o'clock in the morning. And hopefully Sarah will come on, because Sarah is always good value, and she's been up to some interesting things. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about Counterspin before I talk to you, Liz. Counterspin have got an open mic tomorrow at the Bridge in Whangarei. Do I have to say Whangarei? Can't say Whangarei? Better say Whangarei. They've got an open mic, and so if you want to have your say, I think that's how it works. So maybe Sarah might like to tell me how it works. Or Sarah, I know you're listening, but you could pop into the text and just tell me a little bit about it, and I can read it out. Or if you accept my invitation, you can tell the people what's happening tomorrow in Whangarei. And I'm not sure, you did tell me the time, but I can't remember what time it was going to be. Maybe you could just type it in the text there, Sarah, what time it's going to be tomorrow. Let's have a look and see if I can see your text. Maybe you're not listening at the moment. Oh, that's right. You say that you are at the Bridge. Oh, 12 o'clock. So they'll be at the Bridge tomorrow by the stadium. Open mic from 12 o'clock. That's Counterspin. So that's co-producer Sarah Smith and Calvin. Oh, she can't come and talk at the moment. That's fine. Calvin Alp will be there as well, I'm hoping. And that guy Pete as well. Pete Mitchell, I think his name. Is that his name, Liz? Pete Mitchell? The guy that has the guitar and Pete somebody. Pete. Oh, they did tell me. I can't remember. The vaccines, when I was little, it slowed me up, and I can't think speedily. I'm very slow since I was about 3.
After 8 o'clock at night, it's a bit.
My vaccines, yeah, I've been vaccine damaged. Pete Metcalf. Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. Oh, thanks, Sarah. Yep. So Pete Metcalf is going to be there as well. So it's going to be great. Now, do you remember Pete Metcalf? Did you see him when he was talking, when he had old what's his name, Shane Retty on, and Shane ran like crazy. It was the fastest I've ever seen a politician run. He was talking about, he said, why aren't you, what's the story, what's going on up there in Fiji? He said, it's like a cull going on up there, all these people dying from the vaccines. And Shane Retty looked a bit bamboozled, and then he said, and why aren't you looking at ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and all that? And he goes, we got hydroxychloroquine, we've already dismissed that, and those people will be up before the medical council that are suggesting that. But you know what happened is, I know what happened to old Shane Retty. He got information from The Lancet. He read a report that went into The Lancet that actually had to be pulled because it was false information. And so if Shane Retty, if he's not a conspirator or a collaborator with this government, then he's just absolutely ignorant, because he should have done some more research. He could have easily done some research. Dr. Peter McCullough, Simone Gold, Dr. Simone Gold, who else is there? There's a lot of them. Let me think. Dr. Roger Hodgkinson, not Hodgkinson, but Hodgkinson. They've been using and recommending hydroxychloroquine. And just because Trump used it, everyone thinks it mustn't be any good. Just because Fauci laughed at it, the frontline doctors have been keeping people, they've been saving lives, while the rest of these idiots that aren't using their brain have been filling people with remdesivir and killing them, shutting down their kidneys and killing people. That's why so many old people died. They didn't die of COVID. They died of doctors poisoning them and putting them to death. It was like the concentration camps. And that's what's been happening all through 2020. And now these people are coming after your children. Liz, what do you think?
Well, I wrote a letter to the medical council last week, actually, and I added about, I think there were about 15 video clips or news reports, including the doctors that you've just mentioned. And I pointed out to them that at the time of the trials, for the Nuremberg trials, the doctors and nurses featured in their own particular section. So I'm saying to these people, you've now been notified, you've seen these things. If you've chosen not to look at them, that will not save you at the time that you are tried. So I don't know. I've sent it off to many, many, many people. I've put it on the net. I've published it as widely as I can, and hopefully some doctors will be seeing it and thinking about it. I'm sure some doctors know. I know that some doctors are actually giving people exemptions from getting the jab. So definitely there are some moral doctors out there. But they're being borne down upon by the medical council and the institutions, basically.
Was it you, Liz, that was telling me that when you get your exemption from your doctor, some employers, or one in particular, I think you told me, was saying that, well, now we have to send that off to the Prime Minister's office to be checked. So
to the minister they're talking about Hipkins.
Hipkins.
That is true. That is in the case of where these are border workers I'm talking about.
Border workers. So yes. Their doctor's not good enough.
No. I've pointed it out in the letter that I wrote to the medical council. I sent it to the medical council. I sent it to by email, of course, because, of course, I can't print anything out at the moment, can't get near the library, nothing. And so I had to print it out. I had to email it to, I sent it to the medical council, to the nurses' council, association or society. And I told them also about the situation that we've got with the Midwifery Council, where they are trying to stop freedom of speech of one of their members, and we've been fighting an online battle with them, which we're winning, by the way. We're winning. Because employers, apart from those at the border, do not have to have their workers, it's not mandatory for their workers to be vaccinated, right? Mm. The orders are quite narrow, actually, and there are exemptions within the order, because they're playing very carefully, the government. They're making sure that they put doctors in front of them, or they put employers in front of them. So they've got two lines of defence before you can get to them and say, right, it's your order in actual fact that's caused this vaccination. So they're sticking out hostages in front of themselves to try and and they think it's a very unlikely scenario that they do get caught, but of course we know that they will be caught and they will go on trial.
Who's going to try them?
I believe it will be a military tribunal, as was the case at Nuremberg. But of course, we've got to make sure that the military pull in their own first, because you've got Vice Marshal Short in front of the New Zealand Defence Forces, who's ordering his own men to get vaccinated, men and women. And then under the police commissioner, Costa, who's
He's as woke as, isn't he?
Encouraging his people to get vaccinated. But at least in the police force, they're saying to the pregnant women, don't get vaccinated. So that's at least one thing.
Well, we've seen a lot of damage online, haven't we? People saying that. I've seen some horrendous videos, and just my heart goes out to these people that have lost their little sisters. And one guy, the language was terrible. I think it was a guy, might have been a girl, I don't know, had tattoos all over her hands. But oh, I felt so sorry for her. She said, my little sister, you see, you can just F your vaccines. I don't want anyone telling me to do that. I just about wept listening to that. I don't know if you heard that one.
She's in the States.
And I've just heard today from a doctor, I can't say who the doctor is, I've just heard today that there's another young person under 15 in Whangarei Hospital, vaccine damaged. John, were you aware that my neighbour, they nearly lost their daughter, a 14-year-old, had the vaccine on, were you aware of that, John?
No, sir, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, our neighbour, I've actually, if you just go back on the podcast, I've done a full one. Now, Sarah, who's listening here, I'd love it, Sarah, if you could come on and tell us about that, because Sarah Smith actually got to interview my neighbour, the grandmother of the girl that was damaged, and she said that she felt really bad. Her face just went flush straight away after she had the vaccine. This 14-year-old girl, perfectly fit, perfectly healthy, no history of any illness whatsoever. And then she went home. She said, I think it might have been the next day. Don't quote me, but it was she couldn't feel her head and she couldn't feel her feet. And then she went out to a vehicle to get something for her dad, and came back in, and she was shaking like she had Parkinson's. That's what they felt, the mother and father. So they rushed her to White Cross, and White Cross said she's got to get to hospital straight away. So they took her up to Whangarei Hospital, and they treated her up there. Her heart rate reached 175 beats per minute. This is a 14-year-old girl with no heart complaints, no nothing. Just a fit, healthy girl, always bouncing around, very fit and healthy. And she had a heart rate of 175, and she's still not right. Mm. I spoke to Sarah today, and she'd spoken to I think the father and of the girl, and she's still not 100%. She's out of hospital, but this happened on the 2nd of September, and so now this is the interesting thing: the hospital staff said she must not have her second vaccine; it will kill her. Mm. Then within I don't know, half an hour or so, their tune changed. They came back and said, look, she must have some underlying symptoms, some pre-problems, and it's not the vaccine. And the parents were under the impression that they did not want them to speak about this publicly, that it was the vaccines, and they denied that it was the vaccines, and they really wanted them not to talk about it. So, and I phoned a lady who's, I can't really say too much about this lady, but their relation is high up in the political arena for the National Party, and they were involved in the cabinet. And she told me that the hospitals can't report anything unless it's a notifiable disease. And so that's why the government has one death from the vaccines, and that's why Linda Wharton from Health Forum New Zealand has, I think it's something like over 120 deaths recorded as a result of the vaccine, and they're all ages. They had four young people die last week. In fact, that's how many have died from this vaccine. Now, they could argue and say, well, they're all saying that they have comorbidities. But these parents deny it, vehemently deny it. There is nothing wrong with their daughter until she had that vaccine. Right. So, John, what are your thoughts on what's happening in your country with the vaccines?
Well, this is worldwide tragedies, worldwide genocide.
Yeah.
And I was listening to a doctor from Tobago, Trinidad, a black fellow who explain things very well, and I'd have to go back and look at what his name was, but he did a press conference, and he basically just announced that, let me just tell you some of the high points that I remember. He said, this is not, we have to stop calling this an experimental vaccine or experimental jab, because experiments were already done 4 years ago on animals, and they have chimera, if that's the right pronunciation, mice-human chimera, and pig-human chimera, and monkeys that they did trials with these mRNA vaccines with. And within 2 months, 100% of the animals were dead. 100%. Now, he explained that how that translates is that for the animal studies, they take a month is to 1 month of the animal life is a, you know, a year for human life. So, and I've heard other doctors say, testify that people that have had a vaccine, one, not boosters now, just the first one, within 2 to 3 years will be dead. And that's 100%. If it's 100% in the animal population, it's going to be 100% in the human population. And that's why they're pushing this so hard. But there's a, you know, we've talked about this on the show before as well. And other doctors, and I'm just a parrot, you know, that's what I do. I do pretty well, I think. I'm not perfect, but I try to remember highlights or points that people,
you're
doctors,
very good
urologists,
at it. Yep.
Will
you're
say, really good at that. And I just repeat it. I keep repeating it. And so as I was saying, the 100% of the animals, so 100% of the human beings that have been shot one time within 2 to 3 years will be dead. Now, in America, in Georgia, outside of Atlanta, we have what are called the Guidestones, if you've ever heard of those.
Yep. The Georgia Guidestones.
Right, the Georgia Guidestones, and put into place by the elite, by the cabal, whatever you want to call them, the secret society that's in charge of everything, you know. And as a Christian, ultimately, I believe, and the Bible explains this very well in the New Testament, there's the devil, who is the prince of the power of the air. You know, he's influencing, directing these forces worldwide, and we see that orchestration. In every country, we see a suppression of the truths of what's happening to people when they get vaccinated or when they go in the hospital with a condition like bronchitis or pneumonia, and which was treatable, easily treated. I was treated for bronchitis last December, terrible bronchitis. And fortunately, I didn't come under the remdesivir treatments, right?
Oh, you were lucky.
And so it's like this big shell game of the elite, of the devils, to try and wipe out and kill. But going back to the Georgia Guidestones, on that, it says we need to establish a natural balance on the earth with a population not to exceed 500 million people. Well, that's 7 billion of us with a B going somewhere, you know, going in the ground. And I just saw a report, I think it's from the Epoch Times, and what's the other source? Natural News, Brighteon, here in America.
Yep.
They're reporting of mass graves, people being buried, many thousands of people being buried in mass graves. And that's why we're having labor shortages and beginning to have food shortages and production shortages all over the country, because people are dying and they're being buried these ways. And it's like, okay, where's the family? Where's, you know, what is happening? It's like this Twilight Zone existence that we're in now. Every day there's some horrible news gets flashed across our mind. Anyway,
people,
so
we know.
Yeah. People, we know that.
What about the three preachers that were in hospital? One passed away.
We had a pretty infamous, who was that? Preacher, a pretty famous preacher here, and infamous as well, according to CNN. His name is Bob Enyart. And he fought.
Bob Enyart,
yeah. Bob Enyart's dead. September 13th, he died. Yeah. He was instrumental in my salvation, brother.
He's great.
Yeah, he's a fantastic speaker and debater of the Christian faith, and he died September 13th. And my heart goes out to Cheryl, his wife, and his family. And I don't know the details. I haven't had a chance to speak with people that were close to him. But
greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Bob Enyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Someone brought me a copy out of the library of Hillary's book, It Takes a Village, by Hillary Clinton, and I'm real excited to get the book because she's out on her publicity tour. I'm going to read these quotes. It takes a village to raise a child. That's the idea in Hillary's book. It's supposedly an old African proverb that some liberal probably made up recently. Well, anyway, it takes a village to raise a child, all about children and what our responsibility to our children are. And I think many of the statements in this book are not only wrong, but they're corrupt and maybe even evil. Maybe, not maybe, they're evil, they're wicked, they're destructive. So I'm going to read two or three of them, real short, real to the point, and I am saying that these are the notions of a wicked person. These are not the writings, the thoughts of a good person, a righteous person, they're the writings of an evil person. So I would like to hear only, you guys haven't hung up yet, I see all the lights here, I'd like to hear only from someone who, hearing this quote from Hillary Clinton here, It Takes a Village by Hillary Clinton, I'd like to hear from someone who agrees with Hillary that these are smart things and then obviously disagrees with me. And that's it. I won't take a call from anyone else, at least not at the beginning of the show. So here are the quotes. First, we go to page 403, It Takes a Village, by Hillary Clinton. Page 403, the government must declare the child to be the most precious treasure of the people. Right? That's Hillary Clinton, quote number one, and It Takes a Village. The government must declare the child to be the most precious treasure of the people. I think that is a despicable thought, and the person who wrote that is manifestly despicable, criminal, and wicked. All right, now we'll go to the next page, page 404. The government's concern belongs more to the child than to the adult. What do you think of that? I say it's despicable. I say it's criminal. We'll try this again. Caller. Hello, caller.
Hi.
Hi. Do you agree with Hillary?
Yes, indeed.
You agree with those, with these quotes? Let me read them to you one by one, and you tell me if you agree or not. All right?
Certainly.
What's your name?
Tom.
Tom? Tom, what city are you calling from?
Milford Bay, Ontario.
Milford Bay, Ontario. Cool. All right, Milford Bay, Ontario. All right, now here we go. Here are the quotes. You know Hillary's on her book tour, right? Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, she's promoting this book, It Takes a Village. And here's the first quote. Here's the first quote. The government must declare the child to be the most precious treasure of the people. You agree with that sentiment generally?
Certainly.
All right, here's the next page, page 404. The government's concern belongs more to the child than to the adult. Do you agree that the government should be more concerned with the child than the adult?
Yeah, okay.
All right, and then the last one is that the government's financial irresponsibility turns the blessing of children into a curse for the parents. That the government should help parents so that their children would be a blessing and not a curse. You agree with that?
Yeah, I do.
All right, Tom, you're not very convincing, but I'll go with it. All right, now, this book here, can you see it? I have it in my hands. It Takes a Village by Hillary Clinton. Could you see that?
Yeah.
You can see it way up there in Ontario. That's amazing how satellites work, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, somebody gave me the... Look at this book. Somebody gave me this out of the library, but it looks so old. And since Hillary's book is brand new, I don't understand. Oh, my, look at... You know what somebody did? Jerry, did you do this? Somebody put Hillary's book cover on top of an old book. This is not Hillary's. Oh my, look at this book. I can't even believe it. Can we zoom in on this book, please? Can we zoom in? Yeah, get that closer. Do you see this, Tom, in Ontario? Let me show you the
title. That's wrong.
Let me show you the title page here.
That's wrong.
Let me show you the title page.
That's wrong.
Adolf Hitler wrote a book called Mein Kampf.
Mr. Bob Enyart?
Yeah.
Mr. Bob Enyart?
Yeah.
My name is Tom from Milford Bay, Ontario.
Yeah, I know that. We've discussed that already.
Now, I read that book when I was 18 years old.
What, Hitler's Mein Kampf?
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
definitely.
And what's your point?
Now, I know evil. Now, I know the truth about evil. Oh, you cannot show that book and tell the truth.
Hey, Tom.
If you want to cut me off, that's fine. That's
Tom,
cool. That's all right.
Tom, no, only if you become totally irrational. Hey, that's... Tom, those quotes were written by Adolf Hitler.
Now, you must understand, you can take out a quote of Adolf Hitler. My God, sir.
Well,
I appreciate your thinking, but my God.
Will you stop using the Lord's name in vain?
I have never...
All right, now listen, Tom.
You must understand, Mein Kampf.
Tom,
Mein Kampf is evil.
All right, I'm going to hang up on you because you're just babbling. Okay, goodbye to Ontario. Adolf Hitler wrote this book, Mein Kampf, a long time ago. He was a wicked and evil man. And if you go through this book, you'll find incredible similarities. Incredible. Not all of it, of course, but incredible similarities with Hillary Clinton and the whole liberal crew, that they position themselves as child advocates, defenders of child rights. Why do they do that? Well, we'll explain that right here in a moment.
He was against masks and against vaccines, and his church won a case in Colorado to allow the assembly, free assembly of Christians without masks. And of course, they're saying, look, he wasn't vaccinated and he died, right, from COVID. But I suspect, I don't know the facts yet, but I suspect he was unvaccinated, but maybe he caught it, didn't treat it with, ivermectin or something like that. Mm. Went to the hospital trusting the science, right? He's a big science guy. Mm. Trusting the doctors, and they put him on remdesivir. And within 2 weeks, I think he had died.
Are you going to get vaccinated? I think I want to wait a bit longer. What do you need to wait? I'm just not in a rush to get it, mate. Have you had it? Yeah, I've had it. Why are you being so selfish? How am I being selfish? Because if you get COVID, you can pass it on to me. But you've been vaccinated. Yeah, but I can still get it. So if I get vaccinated, I can still get it too. Yeah, but you should still get it because then you won't pass it on to me. But if I get vaccinated, I can still get it and still pass it on to you. Well, yeah, but you should still get it. But you can catch it off me whether I've been vaccinated or not. Yeah, but you should still get vaccinated. But why? Because it's the right thing to do. Who says? The people that make it.